Andrés, muchas gracias.
Thank you very much.
Buenos días a todos los que nos acompañan en la mañana de hoy. Muchas gracias
today.
Por compartir con nosotros esta teleconferencia de resultados de la compañía para el tercer trimestre de 2019. Los logros obtenidos en este periodo son consecuencia del trabajo en nuestra gente, que ha encontrado inspiración en una cultura de innovación y trabajo en equipo que nos permite seguir creciendo y fortaleciendo los negocios. Nuestro talento y esa cultura de están diferenciando en el mercado y
haciendo que
quiero empezar hablando sobre energías renovables, un tema que nos apasiona y que nos estamos
comprometidos,
dando pasos firmes hacia la consolidación en nuestro país. Como se los hemos mencionado anteriormente, en los próximos 5 años, más del 25% de la energía instalada de gente en Colombia provendrá de energías renovables no convencionales, como eólicas y solares. En la reciente subasta de energías renovables promovida por el gobierno nacional, obtuvimos una importante adjudicación que habilita importantes proyectos de la compañía para asegurar los ingresos a largo plazo. Agencias como referente generador que serán otorgados 765 gigavatios hora año para los proyectos eólicos ya casi desarrollados. Ambos proyectos en la
Bolivia.
Cada uno de ellos con una capacidad de 100 megavatios y el otro con
250 megavatios.
Estos proyectos estarán contratados por 15 años a partir de enero del
2015.
El precio promedio de la subasta fue 95 pesos por kilovatio. Es importante tener en cuenta que este precio es sin
impuestos,
es decir, aproximadamente $29 por megavatio. Un precio muy competitivo cuando se compara con las subastas de renovables de Chile y de México. Más adelante vamos a poder discutir el tema de ese precio, pero el precio no generó una gran disminución hacia los clientes del mercado no regulado de electricidad, porque se ubicó en niveles cercanos a los 160-170 pesos en total, que son algo similares a los que estaban viendo en este
rango.
Los resultados obtenidos por el gobierno nacional con esta subasta a largo plazo son muy importantes, ya que se diversifica la matriz de generación del país, pensando la complementariedad entre los diferentes
fuentes.
Nos alegra mucho que nuestros proyectos hayan sido adjudicados y estamos comprometidos en seguir justamente la evolución de la energía solar y la
evolución.
Para nuestros accionistas e inversionistas, los resultados de la subasta son muy positivos. Nos aseguran el desarrollo de los proyectos y su contratación a largo plazo. Es decir, vamos a tener un ingreso fijo y estable sobre la inversión que haremos, y las rentabilidades con las que nosotros presentamos en la subasta son igualmente satisfactorias y buenas dentro del rango que nos hemos puesto para el proyecto de negocio. En la misma dirección de acelerar la fuente no convencional, anunciamos recientemente una alianza con un jugador de talla mundial, la empresa
Cúbico.
La empresa Cúbico tiene dos accionistas importantes, un 50% y
50%,
que son dos fondos de pensiones canadienses de la talla de Ontario y el Canadian
Pension Fund.
Es decir, que son accionistas con capitales a largo plazo, con costos competitivos muy interesantes, y que es un excelente socio para este área de negocios. Vamos a poder impulsar muy fuertemente todos los proyectos de mar. En frente, vamos a aportar nuestro conocimiento del mercado energético local para la parte de desarrollo, exploración, de construcción y operación de los proyectos, así también como las capacidades que tenemos para la comercialización de la energía. Público, por su parte, aportará su experiencia y mejores prácticas a nivel mundial en la gestión de sus activos, así como un equipo multidisciplinario, experto en la identificación de oportunidades de inversión, con capacidad de creación de valor y gestión de largo plazo, con fuertes relaciones tanto con desarrolladores como con fabricantes de equipos y tecnología de cuatro millones. Estamos trabajando en esta alianza. Vamos a acelerar el crecimiento del proyecto de valor en Colombia. Les habíamos mencionado proyectos hasta por 200 megavatios y esta alianza busca poder elevar esta cifra a 400 megavatios en un periodo. Estamos convencidos de poder lograr que los proyectos millones y el gasto asociado a los proyectos de crecimiento distribuidos obviamente la actividad de preparación, la capitalización de esta, la venta de zona franca, entre otros, puede generar un gasto de estimación de 3.7%. Y a eso le suma la participación del costo del 5% de los días. Al analizar el gasto administrativo, el incremento fue el 13% afectado fundamentalmente
foro en temas de Mercomercio y las cifras temporales de Centroamérica han consolidado el peso. En lo corrido del año, el gasto de iniciativa asciende a los 275 millones de pesos, con un incremento del 29% y un aumento normalizado del 7%. El gasto de iniciativa de Centroamérica en deuda es del 3%, en la moneda local está teniendo un 10%. Es importante recalcar que tanto el costo como el gasto de estas operaciones no tienen controlados. Hay una cifra reflejan valores no recurrentes por los proyectos de crecimiento y en el caso de Centroamérica, el efecto adverso de la acelerada de crecimiento. Analizando las cifras, el incremento está en el 5%. Por eso, nuestra operación, el EBITDA confederado al trimestre fue de 325 millones de pesos, 24% por encima del 2018. Colombia aporta 283 millones de pesos, 343%, en la cual obviamente destacamos la positiva contribución de los negocios. El EBITDA de zona franca, estimado en promedio anual de 131 millones, no era parte de los resultados consolidados de la compañía, y así las cosas es de esperar que el EBITDA aguantando esta operación de Colombia está alrededor de 1,1 billones de pesos.
Pero ese es el base, digamos, un año entrante, el año entrante, 2020, digamos, que tenemos 1,5 millones de pesos. En zona franca y con
las operaciones de Centroamérica, que este año registran un EBITDA de 32,4 millones, afectado por todos los temas que ya hemos descrito, esperamos que, como lo mencionaba Ricardo, regrese a niveles mucho más normalizados alrededor de los servidores para el año pasado. En lo corrido del año, el EBITDA anual ya alcanza los 886 millones de pesos con incremento de los en la línea de otros ingresos, obviamente está registrado la utilidad en la venta, la utilidad contable, quiero hacer ese énfasis, la utilidad contable en la venta de zona franca, que asciende a 311 millones de pesos.
En la línea hay muchos inversionistas que les gusta mirar el end-to-end. El end-to-end de zona franca, ¿cómo pueden rentabilidad finalmente?
Sí, finalmente Ricardo, al considerar todos los efectos de zona franca, estamos hablando que la rentabilidad de la administración calcula está por encima del 15% para esta operación.
¿A 15% con puesto anual?
Con puesto anual, de lo que nos dejó la operación. Decimos que son cifras de la administración porque incluyen varios componentes, no solamente. Hay que entender que zona franca también fue una sociedad separada del consolidado durante muchos años. Hubo muchas transacciones que se apalancaron en el Excelsia y en el Unicesta. Entonces no podemos desconocer esos efectos. No se puede simplemente comparar compra-venta de las acciones con los en dólares, dado que tenemos una función de 100 pesos. El 15% está recomiendo. Nuestros esfuerzos pesos, la compra,
for the effort, but we have also had to factor in the information that we have
of the positive effects
for EPSA itself, for the sale of Zona Franca in the last 10 years. It was an excellent investment.
Muy bien, llegamos. El gasto financiero fue de 109 mil millones de pesos, superior al 55%, de la variación de los 1.725.500 están asociados a y se componen principalmente a 14.000 millones de pesos de los intereses de los bonos y 9.400 millones de pesos por los intereses de crédito fijos asociados los 1.900 millones o los restantes 1.900 millones corresponden al mayor stock de deuda, al mayor stock de deuda que se transfiere al estado de resultados, porque corresponde a los bonos verdes, al Atlántico Caribe,
que ya habíamos capturado, pero los intereses todavía se daban al capex. The normalized financial expense in the third quarter for the tolling operation was 83.7 trillion, with a 19% increase over the same quarter of the previous year. The reason is explained by an increase in the debt stock associated with the capital profits, and also to the financing growth project, we transferred the debt.
Okay.
The net same difference with 21.7 trillion. Similarly, the effect of the bridge loan valuation of $100 million contracted for the acquisition of the tolling operation. At the end of the third quarter, sales of the resources obtained from the sale of Sona Bank made a financial investment abroad consisting of a purchase of a short term external account. Now, we feel really proud because of this indebtedness position, because we achieved our goal. The indebtedness company was of 4.5 trillion, a decrease of 1.1 trillion compared to the second quarter of this year. 70% of the debt exposure is in pesos. The average life of the consolidated debt is 8 euros. 7.9% is the average cost of the debt in pesos. 15% below 1 year ago, and 6.5% is the cost of the debt in dollars. 22% below the cost of the year. Consolidated net EBITDA at the end of September was 3 times. 1.4 times below what we observed in the previous quarter. This is very important, Ricardo. I mentioned this at the beginning because that means that this organization is flexible in funding terms. And because of the strategy of the purchase of the foreign operation, and we have to work on that regarding what we mentioned previously. Okay, Stefan. So, those indicators, thought about this previous quarter, so the idea is to settle a little bit more than 400 billion for the last quarter. Basically, we're talking about the bond, Celsius, that will be paid on December the 11th. We're going to pay 264 billion. And we should be paying for this source that we use for the tolling operation, a bit more than 100 billion pesos for the fourth quarter. So the idea is to reduce that, to reduce another 400 billion. So we're going to be very close to 4 in terms of that, and below the 3 times.
So, the
financial structure, we're talking about the leverage here. So, we have a structure in the long term. So, it will only be pending those 100 billion that we're talking about. If we're talking about the capitalization, this is going to continue contributing to the indicator. And we're talking about 105 billion.
Okay.
So the idea, we have a leverage of that we have to remember that after the sale of the assets to ETRA, we structured the payment of the assets. The expiration for bonds, and we really consider that the leverage indicator, the real leverage indicator itself, close to that. Due to that structure that we have, back-to-back structure, let's say, if you will. But remember that when we did the transaction from Celsia to Celsia, assume to cancel those bonds. So we have to source the payment. So Celsia, we look at that as a holding. The cash flow for September was 196 billion, and the consolidated cash flow was 506 billion in consolidated terms, which is an ambition in the short-term investment. We will continue to improve the debt structure, and that's why we're saying we're getting prepared for 400 billion. We're prepared for that, and we're going to be able to pay each one of those loans. So, Ricardo, this and income from the financial results, as you can see, it has no recurring effect, but you can see the bottom line, the consistency of the strategy implemented. That is a solid strategy. Thank you very much, Estela. We're very happy about this. This year, the figures have not been easy to compare. We've had many expenses for projects related to growth. So it's necessary to refine the effects for this transformational project so that we can make the figures comparable. Information is available on our website. Progress this year to consolidate solid results to achieve the goals, and that is very important for the challenges in the market. For the future, we have an asset base with a capacity to produce an annual EBITDA close to 1.3 trillion cup. And in that way, we can also develop the tranquility of that pipeline of projects that can help us to boost and accelerate the growth of the financial results of before wrapping up, I would like to highlight a very important topic here, which is that in environmental terms, we're going to reach the record of 4 million trees planted in Valle del Cauca, and we are reaching now 4 million trees, which is part of the rotation program with the support of the important entities, the environmental agencies of Valle del Cauca. So we're going to get almost 2 million trees planted annually. The commitment was to reach that in 10 years, and we're going to be close to 17 or 18 million trees in 10 years. So that's a great contribution from our team, from the Reverdece team and our partners, of course. Also, as a company, we're ranked second in terms of sustainability and sustainability ranking among companies in the Latin American integrated market. Electricity sector. And we're also part of the top 10 of the world index. These indicators are good for us to compare ourselves, to see what the other companies are doing well, what can we learn, what can we copy, what can we improve. It's not just for us to climbing a medal. We just want to be more sustainable, which is what our stakeholders evaluate in a positive way. And in terms of the market reputation monitor, we moved from 50 to 45, right? And that also helps us to see what else we have to improve. So here our quarter results report. We're ready now to have a discussion about any questions or comments to enrich this conversation. Thank you very much. Andres, we're ready now. Okay, right now, I'd like to remind you that if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then 1 in the keyboard of your phone. If you don't want to ask your question, you just have to press pound. We're going to pause for a little time to have the list ready for the Q&A session. We're going to answer the questions of the participants in Spanish.
And the first question comes from
Mark Hines,
BTG.
Buenos días, Ricardo, Esteban.
Good morning, Ricardo and Esteban.
Tengo varias preguntas, si no les molesta, me gustaría
hacerla
una por una. Y la primera pregunta es, viendo que ya llevamos un trimestre con la operación de Enertolima, me gustaría saber si este EBITDA 45 es el que recurrentemente veríamos mientras se pide la resolución
Resolution 015 is issued.
Hola, Mark, ¿cómo estás?
Mark, how are you?
Gusto saludarte. Te cuento por
aquí.
Es una EBITDA sin la resolución 015.
Es without the resolution 015.
Es una EBITDA ligeramente por encima de lo que hemos
estimado
para nuestro plan de negocios.
For our business plan.
Y esperamos ya, nos están contando ayer, si ya por fin llega la notificación de resolución de cargos para
notificación
for
the market in the Valle del Cauca. We're also waiting for that to we can increase a little bit more that data. We're very happy with the result, with the operation, with the integration as well. And we are enhancing the investment topic in Tolima. The quality of the service in Tolima is something that worries us. Because the operation has quality indicators that are even close to what we have in Valle del Cauca. And we see that a lot of customers are suffering because of this. And we would like to resolve the situation as fast as we can. So we're happy with the integration mark. And I think it was a purchase that is sustaining us all.
Perfecto. La segunda pregunta es que quisiera tener un mayor detalle sobre el resultado de la aplicación de energía hacia los proyectos eólicos. Específicamente me gustaría saber cuál es la energía apalancada esperada que ustedes están esperando de
ellos. What you're expecting, dollars expected for those projects.
Perfecto.
Okay, perfect.
Es muy bueno.
That's really good.
Es muy bueno. Pero yo creo que podemos dar un guidance, Esteban, para que los inversionistas tengan claro. Porque yo creo que, Mark, es lo que me encuentro de tu pregunta, hay una preocupación.
Mark, there's a concern in your question.
Nos había llegado una pregunta anticipada.
We received a question before and said that if the prices close at 95 pesos,
then
one at the 65 pesos, equivalent to the TERE, we're talking about prices of 160 pesos for the regulated market. So it's an important reduction in prices because the regulated market was contracted for 390 and in general terms, for the midterm, not for the long term, not for 15 years like what we achieved here. So there is an advantage in the regulated market. In the non-regulated market, which is the market for big consumption here in Colombia, there's a strong competition there. So we're talking about prices between 150 and 200 pesos between, depending on the companies. So in the end, this price is located at the lowest point of the range where we are competing and we are obtaining good profitability. So I'm going to ask Esteban to talk about this wind project. Remember, we didn't contract that to 95 pesos. We closed at the highest point of both bids. Yes, as Ricardo is saying, the average corresponds to the average of the notification, but the company first vote for the voluntary mechanism and the administrative mechanism for the last five months. So on average, we're talking about 100. When we add the TERE, we're talking about our mean price for sale in the bid is of 170-176 kilowatt hour. The second thing that we have to understand is that the profile that was allocated in this option has the power concentrated in the hours that we technically know, which are low and mid hours. The peak hours were not allocated in this auction exercise. So,
the
energy was purchased from 0 to 19 hours. from 19 to 24 is not covered. That, as we all know, are the peak hours in terms of prices that the market records. But two important things that happened. We sold really well. The price, we're happy with the price that we sold for the hours, for those hours. We have the energy profile for that peak hour, but we have to understand really well when we finish the contract how that office hours will be, so that we can really know the reduction, the effective reduction. With regard to the demand with the auction and the structure of the hours in this exercise. To close the comment, as you know, we have been very vocal that the company looks for all the projects, the profitability that is leveraged, that exceeds 15%. So that's the exercise that we're looking for, and this is not the exception. This case is not the exception. For wind power projects, they also follow the same, they also look for the same profitability. And that justifies the use of the shareholders. Something very important that's happening in the solar and wind power world is that the funding that we find is a very competitive funding regarding the funding costs that we have on average in the company. So that makes that when we include these projects in our portfolio, the structure of our capital is going to be improved a lot. So that was just to close the auction question. Okay, so now, if you could elaborate a little bit more on the partnership to develop solar projects, it would be great. I would also like to understand where the funding is going to come from and how you're going to share the profitability of that development, and if you're going to continue developing the project in the pipeline, or if they're going to be part of this partnership as well.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
the partnership is really good. It took us a little bit long to structure it because we didn't want to lose any detail of the situation and the operational handling that already happened in the team. We have over 40 people in the football team in terms of design, engineering, procurement, and we wanted to enhance that. We are competitive. We know we have the know-how, strong know-how. We have people in different parts of the world working on this segment, people that have been working longer than us in this topic. So it's a great young team, lots of enthusiastic team, lots of knowledge that fits the culture of our company. And we believe that we're going to find value in this. Everything that is more than 8 megawatts, we're going to include it into that platform. We're going to talk about 8 megawatts. And what's happening is that all the projects are moving forward. We already talked about that. And the person that's in charge of the development team knows about all the solar projects that we have in the pipeline. That helps us for our platform. And it's a 50-50 platform. So, of course, we're going to be compensated for all the activities. Okay, that last comment of Ricardo, I'm going to talk a little bit more about something that is going to happen in the future, because finally the partnership with Cubico and the way we structure it, it's a partnership agreement. The assets are going to continue being part of the company, and the main vehicle for funding is something that we already signed, and it's part of the Green Future program. So you're going to continue seeing the operations that with Cubico. Of course, there's going to be some assets on them, but as we said, we're trying to leverage ourselves jointly in the exercise of the having access, the knowledge, the capabilities that we both contribute. And what we contribute is the presence in the market, the possibility of integrating the power metrics with their knowledge in renewable energies. But you're going to see that the assets are going to continue being Celsius assets. And that's going to continue to be like that. In the future, like in any partnership for the long-term partnership, maybe those assets could be used for a different purpose. But right now, you're going to see them as a part of a strategic partnership. It's very important to say that we are not created more red tape. No, we're not creating that. We have to continue being efficient and being the leaders in the solar market, and that's what we're expecting here, Mark. Okay, great. And the last question is, there have been some months since Celsia was reviewing the opportunity of Electric Caribe. So I'd like to know about comments about those two specific things regarding risk of the operation, the current operation, and number two, the leverage. What would that mean for Celsia? Okay, Mark, we have been studying this opportunity, but the board has been very clear in the sense that we have to maintain the financial flexibility and strategic flexibility of the company. And that implies a lot. We're not going to bet on 100%. We're not going to bet 100% to only one asset. Under that point of view from the board, we're looking at this opportunity carefully. It's an opportunity that can have a risk, a complex risk, but it can have interesting profitability as well. For now, we're examining that with lots of care, and if this implies that we lose financial and strategic flexibility, it would be very difficult that the board passes this. We postponed this process for February the 20th, and we're going to see if maybe the government is going to make amendments to the process. We don't know yet, but we will see how things evolve. In general terms, you've seen that in the last 4 years, we have diversified the company, and we sold Zona Franca. It was a risky asset in our portfolio for the profitability that it was offering. So we complemented really well the distribution topic, the new businesses as well. So we don't want to lose that. If this is going to lead us to that negative scenario, so we are now just thinking about preparing the participation there, and there are many things that are going to be taking place, happening, but we're working with a lot of responsibility and prudence in this. Thank you very much. Okay, next question from Catherine Ortiz of Corredores de Vivienda. Good morning. Thank you very much for your presentation. Mark already asked some questions that I had, but I have an additional concern tied to the last question, which is regarding the sale of the government assets. And in part, a big part of those are part of the Celsia business. So I was wondering if maybe you reviewed those assets and if you could guide us regarding which are interesting for you in this moment. Well, as part of the assets, there are several assets that are distribution assets that, as you know, we're going to look at them carefully, but we're going to wait for the government to make progress, because there's a list there, and in the end you don't know if they're going to be up for sale or not. So we are going to be also busy with all different investment processes that we have. We have thermal, wind projects, solar projects. We have to consolidate the tolling operation. We also have all the mobility, power mobility initiatives that we're developing, and we're expecting to obtain good news in the coming months. So the company is entertained with different work sources, adding value for those customers, adding new options. But as soon as we have something, we're going to communicate that accordingly. And well, yes, we're very busy now on that. Thank you very much, Ricardo. There is just a question to complement in terms of the EBITDA net debt. You already told us what you're expecting for the end of the year, but have you already defined a level on which you, or a level that you wouldn't like to exceed by purchasing additional assets? Yes, Catherine. I think that the only thing is 3x the indebtedness that we mentioned in the previously. We believe that the structure can always be kept in between 2.5 and 3x, because that guarantees the flexibility. If we weren't in that position by the closure of 2018, we wouldn't have been able to purchase the tolling operation in the conditions and with the flexibility that we did, and that is part of the strategy. Maybe at some times we're going we know that some solutions depend on a series of additional steps, but we have the flexibility, financial flexibility. But let's say that 2.7 that EPSA is reflecting, that should be reduced to 2.5, a little bit less than that. It's essentially what we're looking for. It's important to understand that the consolidated figure at the region. And we have to see the flexibility, not only the consolidated result, but in the Colombian region, which is a region that is more corporate, or which is the EPSA Beco, which is around 2.5, and that is more than Central America, that have different structures, because the bond that we issued in Panama has different characteristics, has a higher leverage to make use of those conditions. But the important thing is that the profitability are maintained so that we can undertake projects. Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Catherine. Okay, we also have Camilo Roldan from Corredores de Vivienda. Good morning, Ricardo and Esteban. I had two additional questions on behalf of Corredores. The first one was that understanding that there might be an auction in Central America for energy, for power auction. So if you could tell us a little bit about the date, if you already have the date, if you essentially going to participate in those projects. And the second one is a request. If you could give us a guide on the behavior of taxes for next year, in the understanding that there are some non-conventional investments and there are going to be some benefits obtained regarding Law 1715. Okay, yes, Camilo, we're waiting for the auction in Panama. And it's taking longer. They changed the power figures. The government is considering different options. There was also a change that could have an impact on the Panama energy structure because of the water emergency that they're going through now due to the drought. The government announced that they're considering the purchase of the Bayano power plant to prioritize the use of Bayano to channel that water to the canal. So they are assessing all that, and that could mean that there's a drop in the power in Panama because of the use of that water. So it's too early. They haven't said anything, but clearly when if we're going to participate in the auction, we're going to try to participate with the assets that we have available in Central America. And before Stefan talks about taxes, there is something very important here, very nice, which is the works for taxes from the Duque government. We already constructed a road in Suarez Cauca. The community are very happy with that road. And we also are going to work with the expansion of that road. We're talking about an investment of 24, 25 billion COP. So it's not only the utilization that Stefan is going to talk about taxes, but with the taxes that we're paying, we're being able to channel almost 15% of what we paid to communities that we directly benefit with our work. Well, for taxes, let's say that the guideline here is company, but in the consolidated, of course, is going to add. But to date, what we're expecting, what we're waiting for, apart from the sale of Casa, we believe it's going to be in line with the financing law bill. In terms of benefits, tax benefits, we have two solar farms. We have two small solar farms of 10 megawatts each. And so if we're talking about $18 million investment, so we will obtain benefits of 15% of that value. And we also have to add the conscientious topic that we're working on. The big solar farms and wind power farms go up to 18-21%. So the benefit will be for the next year. We expect to have that approved. That's what we're waiting for, that we would benefit from in 2021. Thank you, Stefan. Thank you very much. You're welcome, Camilo. Okay, the next question, Diego Buitrago from Bancolombia. Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for the presentation. I have a couple of additional questions. The first one is, considering the regulatory framework has to do with the contents of the resolution 130 for this year, which puts a limit to the sales of integrated companies for the commercialization of power. If maybe you could talk about the impact in Celsia, of course, and the magnitude. What would be the magnitude? How much the generation business of Celsia depends on that? So if you consider that you could have an impact because of this resolution. And the next question has to do with if you could tell us a little bit about the market, and if you could give us an update of when these projects will go into production. And the last one, as was mentioned in the call, for the accounting emphasis for the income from the Zona Franca sale. So maybe there could be a surprise for the shareholders next year, or if there's not going to be a surprise next year for the shareholders. Okay, Diego, yes. How are you? Well, we have been very open about not agreeing with that resolution. It limits the possibility of protecting integrated markets, in the sense that when you have a controlled market, regulated market, with 1,500,000 customers that depend on the purchases of energy. So today, we cannot allocate that directly to the generation. One has to open that to make the public. Everyone is going to compete for the market, and we can achieve competitive prices. So to limit the amount of energy that can be integrated makes no sense at all. From the impact that it might happen at, we're very small within the power generation context in Colombia. So that's going to hurt the big ones, HESA or Codensa, FM. So we might lose the chance of allocating energy, but two big markets will be opening the door for us to locate our energy there, our power there. So these dynamics are going to be, in the end, something that doesn't worry us. I think it would be a mistake to get that to 10%. It should be more balanced, and we are having those discussions with the control entities to reconsider this. And, okay, now Stefan is going to talk a little bit about the estimated dates for the project. And the last question, of course. In terms of the projects, for construction projects, we are two farms under construction. We expect those farms to start operating by the end of this year or early next year. We're also thinking about other 10-megawatt farms by mid-2020. The big ones, Chicamocha, Victoria, and the rest should go into production by 2021 and 2022. Next year, we're going to be working so that's to complete the operation of the first wind project of the company. If we achieve that, it's going to be by the end of next year. So that would be by 2020. We're working with the generation team to do that. And Acacia and Camellia, which are the other two big wind projects, should start operating by the end of 2022. So 2022, maybe 2021. Camellia could be by the end of 2022. Yes. We have a pipeline of projects, a good pipeline of projects, a nice one. Regarding the profitability, well, in terms of accounting, well, we have some resources. We received 1.1 trillion pesos, and we are reducing debt to have more flexibility. The decision for the dividends, it's a decision of the board. We haven't brought that up for discussion, but we will see what happens in March. Let's see what the shareholders are going to decide and how that dividends proposal will be presented to our annual meeting. You're all invited. Thank you very much, Ricardo Esteban. One last thing. For Tolima, what is the expectation regarding the resolution that will be applied for the assets? Well, we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to that to come into force a couple of months ago, but we're delayed. How many months of delay we have there? Well, we're waiting. We're waiting for that to come into force quickly. We asked them, we have been asking for weeks, starting 4 months ago, and the process is taking long. So that is crucial. The important thing is that we're going to lose the income. This is retroactive. So once it comes into force, you can start charging since April. But, of course, we cannot charge that to the customers in one payment. So we're waiting for that we're a bit desperate on that. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, have a nice day. And we have Ernesto Paniagua from Corfi Colombiana. Roberto, good morning. Good morning. Yes, yes. Two simple questions. The starting date for the accounts for the auctions are for 2022, estimated for 2022. However, those points have a main connection of Cuerpecita because of social problems that could be delayed before it goes into production. So what do you think about that connection? How is it going to have an impact for the power transmission? Are you going to continue purchasing in the stock, the contract? That's the first question. Okay, so yes, I'm going to introduce that and Stefan will clarify. We have two projects. We have two projects, one for 80 megawatts and the other one is 250 megawatts. The 80 megawatts project does not depend, it's not Cuestecitas. It doesn't depend on Cuestecitas but on the connection lines. So we don't depend on that line. We can connect those 80 megawatts directly to our own line that we're going to take to Cuestecitas. There's no restriction, and we are convinced we're going to achieve that. The 250 megawatts project has a restriction, and we need the collector to be there present, the connection there. So what it's enabling that is the line that gets to Cuestecitas at the hill. So it's not the collector line, but it's the line below that for the Alta Guajira project, they were granted that. We have a very favorable position in terms of connections without those dependencies that the others have. So we feel at ease regarding that topic. And even if we had trouble, what would happen? Well, here we have a series of projects here, solar projects. We have a water portfolio for that time. So we have all the backup. Even we have the thermal project, San Patronito. So in terms of energy backup, we're going to have that. And because we're talking about financial agreements, we can back up with all our portfolio. Stefan is going to add to that a little bit. Okay, the important thing is that the portfolio is that we were tied a little bit to some reinforcements that are being constructed in a failure and another circuit that depends on Bogota, but it's not a collector line. That is not located in the communities, but it's more in the black area line that has a benefit for all the towns in the Sierra Nevada. So we're waiting that the link of Intercolombia, which will come by 2021, and if it comes by 2021, it will be a problem, but the link with the GED, the debate is for, well, the idea that it will start by 2022 or 2023. We don't depend on the collector line. So it's another risk, another operation thing. So what Ricardo was saying is that that contract, in the end, is we have to deliver the power, but we need to make use of all the resources in our case to back up the contracts as a backup. Okay, very good. In this case, you don't depend on the collector line, but with some minor works, there won't be any problem in theory to comply with the different obligations in wind power projects. We don't have any risk there. Okay. And the other thing is simply, if you could mention what was recently mentioned about the prices, including the costs and everything, what can we expect for prices in 2020? Do you see a stability with the auction that was granted in terms of the regulation? We already mentioned that it was important to consider something else for the next year. Perfect, Roberto. Okay, the vision of what happened in the market. Well, in the short term, it's expensive because in the next 2 or 3 years, for instance, Hidroituango didn't start operations, and the auctions are going to take 1 year and a half or two, and there are projects that are still to be defined. The pre-feasibility stages are to be defined. So the situation is going to be tight next year. And the other thing is that, for sure, we're going to have the same. Well, the deadlines are expiring. So every 5 or 7 years, we need to change. So we're going to start 2020, 2021 with a different situation. But for 2020, according to the last information from the, we're not going to have a linear effect. But in the short term, the prices are going to be tight. And there's pressure because people are saying that El Nino effect will come, and there's volatility generated by that. But this auction, we have to recognize to the government that it was a success. And it's a decrease in the regulated market prices, which is something very interesting. It's generating interesting pressure from some industrial customers that see that these prices are good for the long term. So the trend for long-term contracts, we can see that trend is going to be marked by 170, 200 pesos, including the SERE. And there we're going to have a competitive market, new projects coming in, solar, wind projects are still there in the loop. So it's going to be very positive for the market. Okay, in terms of regulation that you mentioned before, what else should we keep in the radar? Well, the great agency that is boosting this is an interesting agency. They have been conducting an important study, and they're making some changes to improve their work. And in the regulatory agenda, the CRE has a position to renew themselves, and that can bring important benefits, the micro networks, to control them properly, to have prices to enable commercialization, to offer different agendas and prices for customers. There are a lot of interesting things that are coming in. Am I missing something? The generation agenda has to do, it depends on the internal market. Yes, there are interesting activities coming on. The only thing that is pending is the standardized market. That initiative has not been published yet, but for sure we will have the third or fourth version of it. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you for your goodwill. Thank you. Thanks to you. Okay, Andres, it seems that we don't have any more questions. Okay, yes. We don't have any more questions. That's right. Any closing comments? Yes, I would like to thank everybody that was here with us, tuning in with us. And we will like to have a good end of the year and to have a good projects for 2020 with the consolidation of the businesses we're developing and the project portfolio. Thank you very much for attending this meeting, this call. Okay, so that's how we're coming to an end of this conference. Thanks for your participation. Now you can hang up.